Welcome, everyone, to Authors on the Air, the evening broadcast. This is Pam Stack, your host, and I'm thrilled that you're here with us. Tonight, Terry Lynn Kibbs steps behind the microphone once again in preparation for her show, The Blue Plate Special. Don't go away because Terry has a very special guest with her. We'll be right back. So glad you're here with me this Friday night. It is my turn to turn over the microphone to attorney, engineer, antiquer. She's a blogger. She's an author. She is going to host her own show in this network, in the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, called The Blue Plate Special. She is also a columnist for our network newsletter. Please welcome Terry Lynn Koop. Hi, Terry. How are you tonight?
I am fine, Pam, and thank you for that introduction. And I'm very pleased tonight.
Who have you got with you tonight? Yeah.
Yeah, we're changing things up a little bit tonight. We're going sci-fi and fantasy tonight with Matt Norris of Matt Norris Contemporary Photography and also author of the Blackmont series. Hey, Matt, are you there?
I am here. Glad to finally be here with you after all this run-up.
Where is here? Where are you at right now?
I should say I'm glad to be here with you on the air because where I am right now is kind of dull. I'm joining you from an undisclosed high school parking lot in Western Connecticut. I've just finished a day of 7 hours of senior portrait work, so I'm glad to be doing something Blackmont related instead.
Yeah, and you started before you wrote Blackmont. You are a professional photographer, correct?
I am. I found my first love, and I'm sticking with her.
What kind of photography do you do? Mainly, what's the day-to-day photography?
Oh, the day-to-day is catering to New England's geek elite. I try to bill myself as the premier fantasy and sci-fi-tinged family photographer for New England. We try to get the kind of families that want their baby photographed well, but also holding a lightsaber. The people
Perfect.
Who want to be casting spells in their Harry Potter robes for their senior portraits. Those are my people.
And I've seen your work. I'll tell everyone, you did the cover for my book and just did an incredible job on it. Do you consider yourself to be an artist or a technician? What is important to being a good photographer?
Oh, wow. Fantastic question. It's multidisciplinary. I would say rather than either or, you kind of have to be both plus a psychiatrist to some degree, since most of the work in the session is working people around the inhibitions that keep them from really shining.
What do you mean by that? How do you do that?
Well, most people are raised with very uncomfortable on-camera experiences. You know, we come up through school pictures, you remember, it's terrifying. It's awful. You've got a line of 50 kids you barely know judging you the whole way, and the expectations of mom pressing down on you. So by the time you get to adulthood, you've had a whole slew of experiences on camera that are terrible and that make you feel like, oh, I'm terrible at this, I'm bad at this, I'm not photogenic. When the reality is almost anybody can be amazing to look at if they come at it from a place that's relaxed and they feel safe and they're working in an environment where their passions are showing. So most of the work, you know, most of the psychology is all about just getting people to open up and relax and feel safe and comfortable enough to geek out about something. That's when you start.
And then on the technical side, what do you do to take these photographs to the next level?
All right. So before the session even begins, the photography is done. I've already decided, based on conversations that we've had with the client, about where I'm going to put the lights, what poses I'm going to do in what order, what our locations and timing are. So the photography is mostly done by then. After the session, the real digital work begins. That's when we get into digital painting, compositing, additive and green screen, and try to bring out what they had in their head to begin with, the way they imagine themselves in that costume and the world the costume comes from. Try to bring that into the visual spectrum. That's 9/10 of my job, just making people's imaginations visible.
And I've seen a lot of your wedding photos. You and your wife, Janelle, enjoy photographing weddings, don't you?
The last 2 hours of a wedding are the most fun a person can have with all their clothes on. I maintain this and will say it till the day I die. Wedding photography is not that different from family and fantasy photography, because really, instead of trying to capture just what the day looks like, most of the work is trying to capture the way the day felt instead and make that visual. It's a running theme.
And you tend to do specialty weddings too, like geek and theme, steampunk, thing, correct?
No, the best thing in the world is when a couple comes to me and says, we'd like to do a Lord of the Rings themed wedding, and every table is going to be themed around a different location from Middle Earth, and all of our guests are coming in costume, and we're going to enter to the theme from The Hobbit, and that's my people.
And before we get into your true love, tell me a little bit about your true love, your blue haired fairy wife, Janelle.
Oh man, I'm going to get myself in trouble with this one. She'd be embarrassed. We met in an elevator in college, and I wasn't exactly the suave, articulate, knows how to talk to people type at that point. I may still never achieve that, but at that point I was especially bad. So when I'm getting onto an elevator, prettiest girl I've ever seen is getting off the elevator. She then turns around and gets back on and says hi to me, leaving me locked alone in a mobile box with this completely unassailable beauty. I thought I was talking. I thought I was answering all of her questions, but the way she tells it, I didn't say a word, and she eventually got off the elevator thinking that I must be crazy. In my head, I was having a whole conversation.
That sounds like a bad rom-com movie right there.
It is. We have a serious meet-cute.
And again, wedding, and she's your assistant, correct, on a lot of these shoots, the weddings and such?
She is. She used to be my primary retoucher, and she got more and more frustrated with all the work that I was getting out of the second shooters and assistants I was hiring, and eventually she started talking a little smack about it, saying, oh, I could do better than that. Look at the mistakes they're making. And I said, fine, here's a camera. Let's make this happen. And so she started beating me at my own job about a year later.
Uh-huh. I could see that. And
she said, I've been staring at your work for years. Why would I not know how to reproduce it? I said, most people can't do that, honey.
She does fantasy costuming, correct?
She does. A lot of the costumes you see in my fantasy work were either made or inspired by things that she's created. She manufactures the jewelry. She builds the costumes from the stage, the sketch, all the way up to wearable.
Does she have a website?
She doesn't. She runs an Etsy store, and I can get you a link for that to put up with this later.
Great, great. So now we've talked, weddings and senior portraits. That pays the bills and keeps the lights on. But what's your real love?
Well, when I'm not taking pictures, which is admittedly only about a tenth of my life, I'm finding time to escape into a world that I started writing in about 20 years ago.
And that's the books that you're working on now that you have out?
It is. I started working on them as role-playing game content. And I ran games in this world for upwards of 15 years. Before I finally got around to writing a canon novel.
Interesting. And what's the title?
The title of the first book is Wars and Rumors of Wars. It's the first entry in the Black Mount series, which will eventually contain 6 canon novels and 2 side stories.
Tell us a little bit about them. I know enough about them, and I've read enough about them. It's like, are orcs just truly misunderstood?
Yeah, you're not wrong. I can't really just do what everybody else has already done. It's not in my nature. And so when I look at fantasy races, I'm always trying to rebuild them in ways that are, in ways that feel truer, in ways that feel like they could have naturally evolved somewhere and they might have their own civilization. So I'm trying to tell these stories as honestly as I can from the perspective of, well, in this case, the perspective of the orcs.
Give a sample or a hint of what the storyline is.
Well, we'll start in book one with a coming of age story. It's a coming of age for an orc tribe, which has just lost its leadership and is now being led by a half-breed, pink-skinned, really untrained leader that they've abducted, who happens to be of the bloodline of their former war chief. And it's the story of that former war chief's son, who's coming of age in his own way, trying to figure out where he fits in a world where he's not green enough to fit in among the orcs and not pink enough to fit in among his local humans. It gets into race and identity and the mess that happens when you don't really belong anywhere, but you've been conscripted to be in charge of people anyway.
And mayhem ensues?
Oh, so much mayhem. There's everything from orcs, angels in a spaceship in the first 25 pages to assassination attempts to foreign elven spies. There's a romance subplot that I'm told will make you feel things in your heart places.
Ah, so who are the bad guys?
I don't do bad guys. I do forces in conflict. Legitimate, understandable forces that just can't quite see eye to eye yet. There's in-house opposition from traditionalist orcs who can't imagine being led by something that isn't big, green, and burly. And there's foreign opposition from people who'd really like to exploit the fact that this tribe is now being led by someone who looks a little bit more like them, who talks a little bit more like them, and just maybe a little more of a pushover.
And you said this was the first book. What's up next?
The second book deals in consequences. It's the story of the refugees dislodged by the first book's final conflict and attempting to integrate them into some kingdom somewhere. It's a story of an invasion by off-world orcs from God knows where, and the way that a fledgling nation makes decisions that decide who it's going to be in the long term, right off the bat.
And where are you at in the series, book-wise? Is it book one and two out, or is book three out?
Book one is currently out. Book two is at 352 pages and growing for a total of 700 in the outline. We'll see where it meets up there. The first one ran a little over at 765. Yeah, I write doorstop. Did I forget to mention that?
Well, it is fantasy. So doorstops are, I think they're actually required in fantasy.
If you have a coffee table that's about an inch and a half, maybe 3 inches more like short on one leg, have I got a book for you.
Well, I can just see the Amazon reviews now. Book was too thick to fix my tippy coffee table. 1 star.
There you go.
And who would you say, who do you like to read? Who are your influences?
Oh, dear God, the list goes on. Early Orson Scott Card changed my life. That guy is the reason I don't write villains. He's the reason I just write people in opposition with different interests. I could go on and on.
Expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Orson Scott Card's early work, especially starting with Seeker for the Dead in the Ender's Game series, was a masterpiece in every way. This book showed me that degrees of otherness, degrees of difference, were what really caused the conflict between people, their inability to handle those degrees of difference with any kind of maturity. And so the conflicts in the books that I write, because of what he showed me there, are mostly about people learning to handle maturely the differences in otherness that they encounter. Orson Scott Card writes other species in a way that only Greg Bear has ever really touched, as far as I'm concerned. He writes his aliens properly alien and truly strange, not just people wearing a mask like your Star Trek aliens might be seen.
So who else? Is that another influence on you?
Oh, God, yeah. Give me a little bit of Douglas Adams or Neil Gaiman any day. These guys, I can't separate what I write, what comes out of me, from humor. So as much as we talk and work in grand themes here, expect these to be funny. You know, Neil Gaiman has a way of twisting a phrase and making you always look at every main character as kind of a wet cat having a bad day, who you really root for anyway. These are my protagonists, and I get that straight from him, that idea that that's what it feels like to me, writing a protagonist. And Douglas Adams, he coined that. He was the master of that craft.
So somebody who approaches your books, they're, again, a fan of Neil Gaiman or a fan of Orson Scott Card, they're gonna see that in your book?
I'd like to think so. I'd be flattered to think that some of those influences are going to come through. It definitely reads something more like a Neil Gaiman or a Douglas Adams, I'll tell you that, but with a little bit of the wisdom underneath it that I try to source from, you know, an early Orson Scott Card.
Hold on just a second here. I need to make a short announcement. I'm just saying that the switchboard is open. If someone would like to call in and speak to Matt and talk either geeky photography or geeky fantasy books, the number is 347-633-9609. And the first caller will get one of your books in ebook, courtesy of Authors on the Air. So back to what we were talking about here, books. Name a book or two that's a favorite of yours.
Well, we'll start with the best Gaiman ever. Neverwhere is a project that I can't overstate the importance of. It's one of the best things I think has ever been written. I will hyperbolize about it until you make me stop. I read it at least once every 2 years. I like the idea of worlds right underneath the surface of the world. So if you just look at the world a different way, you'll see a completely different reality. And Neverwhere gets into that by making it literal. Plus, it's easily Neil Gaiman's finest writing. His prose can make a boring day seem revelatory.
And I can see how that would appeal to someone whose job is making people look good on camera who don't think they look good on camera. You see other worlds.
Seeing people to photograph is not—it's not all that different from what he's already doing with words. You're showing people how the rest of the world sees them. Because most people look in the mirror; they're not evaluating on what they're seeing. You know, the light bouncing back at them. They're evaluating on their feelings about what they see.
Well, definitely.
Sometimes it takes an image.
For example, I had you touch up that image of my friend who's been recently knighted in his SCA group. He loves that. He absolutely loves it because it also shows him what he sees of himself inside.
Exactly.
Being the knight, the fantasy.
That layer of reality is real. Making it visible, that's where the craft comes in. But there's no reason why our inner truth shouldn't be, you know, visible, shouldn't be able to be seen. And if that takes, you know, hiring a craftsman to make that happen, it's worth doing. You know, and all of communication is based around being known. So
that's kind of a theme through your books, isn't it? The inner worlds.
It really is. Most of what I'm writing isn't from the normal perspective I've come to expect from reading fantasy books. It's not a sword and sorcery type perspective. You really live deeply in the heads of whoever the chapter that you're reading is based around. The perspective is from their point of view, through their prism. You're hearing their thoughts. You're feeling their feelings. And it's very subjective to them. When you're reading a chapter by Mellory, you're really reading her take on the situation, not my take on what she's going through.
So
she's the secondary protagonist who stole book one. At one point, she just said, "Oh, by the way, I'm a co-protagonist. I run this story. Do you mind?" And I said, "All right, hey, by all means, take over."
But I want to hear more about this half orc, half human.
Oh, Thon, my favorite war chief.
That sounds awkward.
It really is. He straddles a reality where there's just no winning. Come to be a person who's he's got some character flaws. He's a little bit Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly. His character flaws mostly revolve around honesty. He never grew up with the luxury of being able to be genuine with anyone, and so most of what comes out of his mouth is some sort of clever political manipulation. It's so native to him that he has trouble not lying. But he lies for the benefit of everyone around him. He lies for the benefit of tranquility. He lies for a cause. So he's a weasel, but he's a good weasel. He's also more heroic than he lets on. This is a character who will never see himself as a good person, but by the end of the series will have saved the world a number of times from things it didn't know it needed saving from.
I like that. I like that concept of the character who has no concept of being honest. Hang on to your answer on that, because we're going to put this back over to the boss lady, Pam, for a space station break.
Well, hi there. What a fascinating conversation. I have one question before we do that. Are you a fan of Jim Butcher by any chance, Matt?
Oh, dear God, yes.
You know,
I got
turned on to him at a used bookstore, and I was asking for recommendations out of the stuff I normally read, and the guy there said, well, my favorite writer is Jim Butcher, and I consumed every one of his books in order they were written. I went to the library and ordered all of them, and at the time, I could order 50 books in 30 days. Or up to 50 books in 30 days. So I ordered all of his books and read them in order, and he's just amazing. But having that said, I wanted to let everyone know that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. And we'd like to thank our new sponsor, Down and Out Books, for 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. Go find them on the web at www.downandoutbooks.com. And just another reminder that Matt is taking calls, and so is Terry. The number is 347-633-9609. Whoever calls in will go ahead and win a copy of Matt's book. Back to you, Terry.
Okay, where were we? We were talking about your protagonist and his belief that he never had the luxury to be honest.
That's right. He's a complicated character. I don't tend to relate to member of majority group who swings sword because he's the chosen one narratives. I like a good underdog, and I like a good outsider. So this is my attempt at writing an outsider underdog who you kind of root for no matter how weaselly he might have to be from time to time. He takes liberties.
But he'll end it, but you're going to make him somewhat heroic, at least situationally so, correct?
Oh, of course. He's got a better heart than he thinks. Now, I'm giving you the perspective on him that he has on himself, point of view. This is someone who martyrs himself at his earliest convenience and at every convenience. If anybody's going to get thrown under the bus on his watch, it's going to be him, and he's going to do it gladly and without a second thought.
And
but
are we going to find out?
Hearing.
Are we going to find anything out about his rather unusual, awkward parentage?
In the very first chapter, I'll give you a cursory overview. He was not sired with consent. He was sought out in chapter one by a father who was getting on in years and looking to reabduct/recruit his son to groom him to take over. That didn't go well for dad. Son had a chip on his shoulder. So I'll leave you with that. You're going to have to read the book to find out more. But turns out he was a bit of a mama's boy, having been raised only by his mom, and didn't take kindly to meeting the one that killed her.
And in the latest crop of sci-fi and fantasy movies, do you have a favorite? Are you a Guardians of the Galaxy guy?
I'm a big nerd. I'll watch anything that has a Marvel logo on it. I know. I can't help it. I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman. I haven't gotten time to see it yet, but that's probably going to be this weekend.
And
really, if it
just
came
when
from
you,
a comic book, I'm probably going to want to watch it.
when you were talking about your reluctant hero with, you know, some interesting absentee father issues, that immediately made me think of Star-Lord.
Oh, yeah.
And the humor as well.
The Guardians of the Galaxy movies do kind of feel like the same vibe as Black Knight, with a cast of misfits with absolutely nothing in common except the fact that they're rolled into a situation together where coexistence and cooperation are their only viable path to survival. It's
a
family of opposites.
So kind of a Guardians of the Galaxy Firefly vibe?
Very much so. Firefly was a strong influence from the beginning. I love the idea of living on the fringes of civilization rather than coming from an established kingdom that everyone's familiar with. This one takes place so far outside the main that trade routes don't even go there.
And no, that sounds absolutely fantastic. Just a touch back too on if people want to see your incredible cosplay photography, your website or Facebook the best place to go?
mgnorris.com will give you all the latest, but my Facebook is probably the best place to take a look at them if you want to see the most current, the most recent, and only the best of the best. My website tends to be more of a client portal and a way for people who are already in a relationship with me to get the work that they've commissioned already.
So look you up, Matt Norris, on Facebook to see the best and the brightest of what's going on. And when we talk cosplay too, you go to conventions, but we're not just talking about a couple of people grinning, holding their, you know, their swords. We're talking full on character photography, correct?
Oh yeah. My goal is to make movie stills for people from the movies in their heads. So that means fully realizing the vision that starts with the costume they made, and building composite to create worlds around them that look like where that costume probably comes from. If someone, you know, pours thousands of dollars and even longer hours into creating a Samus Aran Chozo armor suit for Metroid, you better believe I'm going to create other worlds for her to inhabit. And it starts on a gray plate, and backgrounds get built on in components, then special effects layers go on over that, and the pose is chosen well in advance of all the compositing to create shapes around the image that give you that action feel that the game or the comic book would have in it to begin with. You really, if you come to me for photos, you come away with an image of you inhabiting that world, not just waving happily from it.
That's fantastic. And the same way, if anyone is interested in getting in touch with you, either about your book or about your photography, through Facebook?
Facebook works great. The MG Norris Contemporary Photography Facebook page or the Black Mount Series Facebook page are great ways to get in touch. Also, savetheorcs.org. If you have direct inquiries on the books, that's a great way to reach me. Likewise, contact info at mgnorris.com.
Tell me a little bit about the website for the book, savetheorcs.com. What will people find when they go there?
It's a .org. I wanted to make sure it was a
.org, excuse me.
Because I've styled it as a sort of a mock charity where all the proceeds from the books go toward the rehabilitation efforts of the reputations of maligned fantasy species. I can't help the whimsy. It's just part of my brain, and I'm not going to fight it. But,
so it's savetheorcs.org, O-R-G, correct?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. It's very, very amusing. I found it very, very funny, and highly recommend anybody go check it out and see that. And really, let's see, to finish this up, what are you reading right now?
Well, right now, I just finished another read-through of Neverwhere, and I'll be moving on to Jim Butcher's series, the only series of his that I haven't read, The Aeronaut's Windlass. It's a steampunk fantasy, it looks like. And anything Jim Butcher, I'm over the moon for. Although I will say the Codex Valera is going to be hard to beat. That was a fantastic series.
And the last question that I usually ask everybody is, after they're done with your book course, recommend another book for the folks out there listening.
Oh, well, I get a little bit of a pleasure here because I get to plug a book that's not released yet here. There is a book coming out from Angry Robot, Joseph Brassey being the author, called Skyfarer. I've just finished beta reading this, and I cannot overstate how much better at everything this guy is than me. I want to be Joseph Brassey when I grow up.
Excellent.
This guy has managed to craft a completely otherworldly new world of floating continents in a world that has no ground, and the starships that move people between them. It's an emotionally moving and incredibly exciting book, and I can't wait for the world to get their hands on it. Should be released, I think, September.
Excellent. So we're gonna go ahead and wrap this up. And thank you for coming on Authors the Air tonight. And I'm definitely going to want to see you back on the Blue Plate special to talk about Black Mount 2 as we get closer there. So thanks for coming in, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Anytime.
And I'll be talking to you soon about book covers.
Can't wait.
All right.
Thanks very much to you, Matt. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great night. And Terry, once again, you've just struck gold with your choice of guests. Thank you so much for being with me, and we'll talk soon. Have a great weekend, everyone. Read Matt's book, War and Rumors of War. It's excellent. Have a great evening, all. Thank you so much for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.
Good night.